Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joining my old dolly boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on this week's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw, but also SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Oh, AW Dynamite, AW Collision, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review Monday Night Raw, a show that had plenty of manner. What a show.
This is, honestly, I can't remember in years a WWE Monday Night Raw as good as this. Here's the cynical take. You knew it was coming. This was the least WWE feeling show in quite some time. And as a result, for my tastes, it was one of the best Raws in years and years and years. This is class. I really enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, Michael Hanvel is actually better today, but he passed out watching this show. Yeah, I've heard from him since. No, get well soon, Hanvel. Where to begin? I suppose we should just do this chronologically, because if we bounced around and tried to review all the good stuff, then we'd be all over the place, and we're going to be like that anyway. So
you already are. You're deciding where to start.
Yes.
The start?
The show opened with Cody Rhodes coming out to 15,000 in the Allstate in Chicago and asking everybody, what do you guys want to talk about? I've ruined it already, haven't I? Cody said, look, he could come out here and say nothing because they're in that awkward two-week period before WrestleMania where the time for talking's over. But Roman Reigns has been talking quite a bit, particularly on Pat McAfee's show, and Pat gets a pop and he puts Pat over and he puts Cody puts Cole over as well. He says, look, Roman Reigns referred to me as a politician. There's a Roman sucks chant saying that Cody's been making promises he can't keep. That hurt Cody, but this city more than others should know when he makes a bet or a promise, he keeps it. He's had, you know, a fan ask if he'll be the best man at his wedding and the awkwardness of explaining that to his missus. He's going to be at a five-year-old's birthday party. And, of course, the wonderful thing that he did, which seemed a little bit ironic briefly, when he wasn't going to be main event in WrestleMania with Roman Reigns, when he bought the wrestling club tickets to both nights of WrestleMania. But the reason he does the things he does is not desperation. He dresses the way he dresses. He talks and walks the way that he does. He pretends to be a champion because the champion isn't here. I like that line.
Yep.
He said he respects Roman Reigns, but make no mistake that he's aware that Roman Reigns screwed him out of the biggest dream he's ever had. And although he respects him, please understand he hates his guts. It's fine if Roman Reigns hates him too. After all, it's Cody's fault that he and The Rock can't have the wank fest at Mania because he won the Rumble. Not once, but twice.
Pick that up in WCPW.
Yeah. And he gets all the fans to point at the WrestleMania sign with him. We're going to have to break this up into sections because The Rock's about to come out. And we'll talk about that briefly. But we mentioned on the news about this tightrope he had to walk here of like, I'm kind of the best, guys. I'm kind of doing good stuff.
Big gag, but big smile.
But I'm not being
big heart.
Too arrogant. This was a really great opening.
Really great opening promo, yeah. The whole point of being like benevolent, charitable, like a really good guy, is that it's meant to be a display of your character, and a good display of your character is what you are like when people aren't watching. Obviously, these really cool things that he's doing have been part of the... like hand in hand with like a publicity campaign, essentially, if you want to be incredibly cynical about it, and you are meant to sort of like donate to charity or good initiatives or whatever, or like on the down low. You're not meant to say it out loud because then you arouse suspicion that you're self-interested and your motivations are a little bit suspect. But as we said on the news, YouTube, wherever you get your internet from, he just walked that line brilliantly. And I just thought, well, he is untouchable, and, you know, I hate the wordplay, but he's legitimately quite undeniable. If you look at the political challenges he's faced, if you look at the inherent challenge that is being storyline associated with The Rock, not everyone's come out of this looking particularly great or better than they were when they went into it. The Rock is professional wrestling heroin. Too good. Just don't bother. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what he is. And for Cody to still be as over as he is, if not more, he's done an absolutely tremendous job. And well, that was the end of the segment, and I was really happy with the promo.
The Rock interrupts. The roof comes off the Allstate. There's a sort of, people can't decide if they're jazzed that The Rock's here, but they love Cody. So do we boo him? There's holy chance. There's this is awesome chance. There's a stare down in the ring between The Rock and Cody Rhodes. There's some CM Punk chance as well. But The Rock doesn't say anything on microphone. He simply leans in and whispers something to Rhodes, who gets this look, slightly taken aback by what's been said. But The Rock just leaves without saying anything or doing anything for now. And obviously people chant, Rocky sucks. Speculation online, presumably after the fact, that The Rock said, tonight I'm going to make you bleed. But we don't get any confirmation of that, despite catching up with both parties backstage.
Yep. Amazing surprise. It gets even better later, which we are really looking forward to getting into. Who's ready for story time with Michael Sidgwick, baby? Back when I had an excuse, right? We're talking 1998, going into 1999. Comprehensive school. All my mates... we love the Attitude Era.
Mm-hmm.
We might tell the teachers to suck our cack. We might try and get each other with certain things. Wilbur, what time is it? It doesn't matter what time it is, that kind of thing. I had a mate who dragon print shirts were in.
Oh, yeah, I
at
remember.
The time in Top Man, which is one of the leading fashion menswear brands in the United Kingdom. And... someone I used to associate with would walk around Metro Center, which is a shopping mall, with a dragon shirt unbuttoned. That's how much people were besotted with wrestling at that age and how much they kind of wanted to be The Rock. Wilborn, why don't you tell the listeners and the viewers what we've literally spent all morning doing?
Well, we've been recounting the events of this wild show, but mainly... listening to The Rock and Tech N9ne and smashing our arms and talking about how manners flowing everywhere, basically. We've been cosplaying as The Rock for a long time.
About 2 hours now.
Yeah.
He's just the best.
I've been telling you.
He's just too good. Like, as I said with Cody, he feels somehow on the same level or there or thereabouts, which is a huge testament to him. He is... Roman Reigns doesn't have the same manner as he did 2 months ago, I'll tell you that for now. There's still time.
Yeah.
But the inherent risk with trying to inject so much manner, extreme manner, on Monday Night Raw is, well, so far, he's just overshadowed everything. And yet there was a lot of great stuff on this show that had nothing to do with him.
That's a good point, yeah. I did like, yeah, I can't remember where on the show, but they're obviously saying, oh, next week it's going to be like Judgment Day versus DOI and Awesome Truth or whatever. It's the go-home, obviously, Raw ahead of WrestleMania. And they didn't say it like this, But it felt like they said, The Rock's going to be on Monday Night Raw, and Roman Reigns is going to be here as well.
Yeah.
He's the world champion. He's got this, you know, anyway. Jackie Redmond catches up with The Rock immediately after this and says, what did you say to Cody out there? And he says, why don't you go and ask him? And then we go to the back, and there's Damian Priest, Finn Balor, JD McDonagh, Dominic Mysterio, and Rhea Ripley, and of course, collectively, Sige.
They're in the f***ing Judgment Day. On the other side.
Rhea says to Dom, you should have asked for help when you went to SmackDown, when he cost his dad again. And he said, yeah, all right, fair enough, it won't happen again. And Priest and Balor tell JD McDonagh, you need to take care of Ricochet, he made us look stupid last week. And Priest has a plan to get the odds in their favor before WrestleMania. More on that in a bit. And McDonagh said he's going to handle Ricochet. And Rhea Ripley was just like, don't handle him, just win. Just win the match.
Just win.
And then we got the match. Ricochet versus JD McDonagh. A pleasant surprise this for me. Because I think, you know, yesterday when we were previewing it, we were like, oh my God, CM Punk's going to be out there. And what's, you know, what's going to happen with Cody Rhodes, et cetera, et cetera. And some matches are going to happen.
Yeah.
But
they have to. It is wrestling.
Having 15,000 Chicagoans in the Allstate certainly helped this and certainly helped restore some good feeling towards Ricochet, because he was fantastic. He's always been fantastic, I should say. Ricochet kicks JD McDonagh outside, dives onto him, early break in the match. When we come back, McDonagh's in control, but Ricochet comes back, handspring elbow, springboard clothesline, standing shooting star for two. McDonagh fires back with a Spanish fly for two and a brain buster as well for a near fall. Ricochet hit an avalanche, poison rana, and the recoil. But Dominic Mysterio, who's come out with JD McDonagh, pops JD's leg on the ropes and draws the referee's attention to it. Ricochet goes for the springboard 450, but McDonagh gets his knees up and cradles him for a near fall. And we go to another break. When we come back again, JD's in control. Hits a sit-out powerbomb for two. Ricochet hits a Canadian destroyer, which gets a decent pab.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Goes up top. Dom jumps on the apron as a distraction. And as he jumps off, he inadvertently crotches Ricochet at the top. The ref is like, get out of here. And in the end, Ricochet manages to hit a standing JD McDonagh with a shooting star press.
Oh my God.
For the 1-2-3. Yep.
I was very low expectation-wise on yesterday's preview. And to be fair, this was still... like, everything is sub-Osprey now. Like, everything is sub-Osprey. He did not invent this style, or rather, these disparate styles that have formed the hybrid style. Far from it, but he's just the absolute best practitioner of it going today, potentially of all time. Not for me, Jeff, but a lot of people think so. So we are living in a sub-Osprey world. And this sort of style... I don't know, it's not usually my favorite thing, but in terms of pure execution, and it was elevated by the crowd response, like some of this work looked tremendous, like the destroyer variation looked great. In terms of the story, you just had Dominic Mysterio be Dominic Mysterio, and beyond those attempts to generate heat, it was a sub-Osprey shootout. That's what it was. But in terms of how well they work together, like in that gear sort of way, execution-wise and noise-wise, this was a really good time.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really enjoyable. I think it was this match. They've started, obviously, doing a variety of different production things. We talked about the Sami Zayn storming backstage thing the other week. And I'm fairly certain we've mentioned, I love those new... coming up after the break, we're going to see this person. They have that, and it's like just images of them. It looks awesome. They experimented with different like camera angles here, and whilst that is never going to make or break a wrestling show, the fact that they are, you know, moving away, as you mentioned at the start of the show, this wasn't the WWE Raw that you've been used to for decades.
No,
it's just, not necessarily, you know, completely changing things, and it's never going to change overnight, and it would be weird if it did. But yeah, just... breaking free of certain shackles.
Yeah, as ever, I find myself in the middle of two takes, and increasingly in this incredibly tribalist world, it is the best place to reside. I don't think it's a big Paul Thomas Anderson tracking shot like last week.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's cinematic on that level. And yet at the same time, it just gives a different dimension to the show. And it's a bit different. And it looks really professional and well executed. Mm. And I do think the production has improved immeasurably from pure shit.
Yes.
But immeasurably is not inaccurate. It just looks and feels like a more major league, less incredibly annoying, idiosyncratically WWE. Mm. It just feels like they are doing little flourishes. And again, I'm not saying it's cinema. I'm not saying it's groundbreaking. I'm not saying that it's make or break for the show. But these little flourishes, genuinely, just that finding little ways here and there to just make it feel major league. It just feels so big.
Mm. And that was when they announced 15,810.
And it is big.
In the all-state.
Demonstrably, it is huge at the moment.
What did you say on the news? The biggest crowd since the Raw after Mania 2019?
It was WrestleTix who took care of the data. So I've not gone through the records. It was WrestleTix's take.
So they've opened up another area before last night's Raw, because when we were looking on the preview, there was like, I don't know, 60, 100 odd tickets left, and that was just going to knock them over 15,000, I think. So they had to open up another area, which speaks volumes, like you say, about how
it's
hot it is.
A hot goddamn ticket.
CM Punk's coming to the ring next. He's wearing the Chicago Cubs championship belt. And, here he comes.
Right. Usually, when we do these podcasts, Will Bourne will do his brilliant recaps. Throw to me for analysis. Then we'll have a bit of discussion, some absolutely ridiculous tangents, and then we get back on track and kind of repeat that loop. I'm gonna have to stand up here because I'm gonna step on his dick, and I can't do it sitting down. If you know what I'm saying. But I think I'm gonna interject a lot. I'm sorry.
Free.
Otherwise, there was so much to unpack here that if you just say the things, I will lose sight of like about 10 different ticks, let alone lines, let alone how they were sort of, let's just go.
So CM Punk comes to the ring. He's got a lot of things to get to, a lot of business to conduct. But before all that, it's good to be alive in Chicago on Monday night. Everyone's asking if he's going to be at Mania, and the short answer is yes. He's not medically cleared, but his mouth still works. Just ask April.
Okay.
I know we're going to go back and forth on this. That line confused me. I didn't understand what he was referencing there. Just ask April.
So he says that his arm's really hurt.
Yeah.
But his mouth still works. Just ask April. Now, this works on two levels, okay? One, his mouth still works, therefore he's still able to cut promos.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do commentary,
exactly. Yeah. He can still promote matches. He can still sort of build his storyline. So his mouth still works. But just ask April. Mm. Now, April is the government name of his wife, who you would remember more as AJ Lee.
Yeah.
And if his mouth still works, and she can attest to that, it's because he's good at cunnilingus.
That makes all the sense in the world. Thanks for clearing
that
one up.
So he's good at eating muff.
People have suggested he hosts WrestleMania.
That's what he said.
10 years ago, he'd have thought that was beneath him. He wishes WrestleMania was in Chicago. Hint, hint. Maybe he could be a referee.
Before we get started on anything, every single... And I know he's a babyface. He should be a heel. That is my big takeaway, right? And I know he's a babyface. And I know part of the babyface's act is to pander to the crowd. He always basically outs himself as a huge narcissist. In every single promo he has cut since returning to pro wrestling, it becomes all the more staggering to me that he had 7 years away from it.
Yeah.
Because every single week when he has a big in-ring segment, he just basically says, thank you for your validation, I need it.
Mm. People have asked him if he could be a referee. Mm. Is there a match on the card who could use a referee, he says. He says, look, a lot of people talk about me. Even those who hate me need to talk about me. He references Pat McAfee's podcast, says he isn't a daily listener. Thanks for listening, Phil. But Roman Reigns was a guest on Pat McAfee's show. Why does Reigns need to bring Punk up? I mean, he's earned it.
We should mention... Should we mention...
I wasn't sure, so I skimmed past it. He alluded to listening to Jim Cornette.
Yeah. All I'm saying is that in terms of... If he wants to be this polarizing figure, and I'm fairly certain that's what he can't not go for, it's just in his nature, then he's certainly furthered that.
He says, look, he's coming back. He's climbing the mountain. Reigns on his way back down the mountain. They'll see each other pretty soon. Then he talks about Seth Rollins. Says they go way back. They don't see eye to eye. He's wearing these high heels now, so he's taller than CM Punk.
Yeah, he's talking about Seth Rollins wearing high heels. And then later, he talks about Drew McIntyre wearing a skirt. So?
Yeah, exactly.
This is ugly in parts.
Yeah, not wise. He talks about him lolling at Punk hurting his arm. Maybe he's earned that, but with all the time in the business. But coming from someone with two bad knees, that's kind of funny to Punk. Then there's someone who hasn't said a word about him. The Rock. Maybe that's because 10 years ago, he came face to face with me and realized that his arms were too short to box with God. Always loved that line.
He won those matches.
Yeah, I did think that as well. And then there's Drew. Here we go. Punk hasn't responded to everything Drew's been saying because he handles his business live and in living color.
I love how he said he's not on the internet all the time.
When you've got a problem in Chicago, you handle it face-to-face like a man. And here comes Drew McIntyre.
He's on it more than an aggregator.
Here comes Drew McIntyre. But before he can say anything or before he can really properly make his entrance, Punk's like, turn that stupid song off.
Yeah, sorry. One more. We're going to unpack this bit by bit, maybe. We'll see how it goes. When CM Punk... he's so good that I've used this in the past. I'll use it again. CM Punk, and I think this is what a lot of people struggled with post-Brawl Out and all the testimonies and all this, the different sides of the story, is that CM Punk is such a convincing speaker and he has so much conviction behind everything he says, even when a lot of it is demonstrably incorrect or hypocritical. Mm. He could talk to me. And I'm not saying he thinks the earth is flat. In fact, I'm fairly certain he doesn't. Mm. He could convince me within 3 minutes that the earth is flat. And I thought, maybe.
Yes, we do live in a glass dome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Phil. Anyway, tells him to shut that stupid song off.
And then, that's what I was saying. Instantly, that song becomes, it is rubbish.
Yeah.
It is pretty bad.
So he says, I'm not medically cleared, but I need to have a wrestling match. Get your bitch ass in here, he says. Drew doesn't do that. He stands on top of the ramp and says, I'd love to get in there and beat your ass. But the last time we were together, we both know what happened. Destroyed your arm, etc., etc. And Punk, says, are you a Scottish psychopath in a kilt or a troll on the internet, a gut in the skirt or whatever?
Ugh. It's just beneath him.
Yeah.
Ugly stuff. That's, I would like to think it's beneath him.
Mm.
Who knows?
But Drew says this is perfect. He's got a title shot. He's got everything he wanted. It's divine intervention. He prayed for this, as he's mentioned before. He's got his shirt with the checklist on. First thing on it is, of course, injure CM Punk. And Punk says, I never have to put another man's name on a shirt to sell it. And Drew rips off his shirt to reveal the graveyard thing that he's the one he had before.
Very interesting trivia note. Sorry, very quickly.
Like these.
He's lying, of course. It is CM Punk. I don't think he sold the shirt, but going back from the classic Terry Funk t-shirt, he had a t-shirt printed same day in Chicago, I broke Big Show's hand.
Oh, yeah.
And the turnaround time and the one-hour tease that they got it from Chicago is what I think first was the germination of the idea for pro wrestling tease.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Nice line from Drew in here as well. You don't do drugs, you don't drink, and yet you spend all of your time in rehab.
Chef's kiss. Whoever wrote that, and if it's Drew himself, someone deserves a raise. That's incredible stuff.
But you know what Punk's comeback to that was? Boo this man.
And it was like, so basically, we'll try and convey how quickly he said that, right? Because we might be missing something here. Punk, it's ironic for all your talk of, you don't drink and you don't do drugs. You spend all your time in rehab.
Boo this man.
He was jumping down people's throats here.
Yeah.
So quickly, and we'll get to why I think that was maybe at the end.
Drew talks about how CM Punk is his muse, his inspiration.
Muse.
His inspiration, effectively, when he's struggling with those big weights, he just thinks of CM Punk and boom, nails it. Punk's like, please get in here so we can have a fight. Drew says, you're from Chicago. You've probably got a weapon in there. I'm not getting involved. So instead, Drew sits cross-legged on the... it's wild, this. He sits cross-legged on the announce table while CM Punk lays down in the ring. And I'm going...
It starts to fall apart here.
I'm going, what's going on? And Drew says, don't shoot up my kilt because you can see my big kiak. I don't think he actually said that on mic, actually, no more I think about it.
No.
He says, look, I want you to have a front row seat for me winning the world title, says Drew. I'm the chosen one. And Punk jumps all over this. Chosen by who? What's his name? What man of good virtue said this?
Right, like this is, we need to unpack this.
Yeah.
The first thing I want to bring up is that when CM Punk returned to WWE, Vince McMahon, who did bestow upon Drew McIntyre the nickname The Chosen One, that Vince McMahon was still in power in WWE when, having returned somehow, huge power play after first being, how to phrase this? There were always stories, Rita Chatterton, surrounding Vince McMahon. The first time it became the big news item, he returned. And before the Janelle Grant lawsuit came out, between those two points, CM Punk willingly returned to WWE with, in the back of his head, knowledge that Vince is still here. He's still informing WWE's business. Is there really anything stopping him from one day stepping in and having direct control over my career? There was nothing at the time. So you can't do that.
No. He says it wasn't the good people of Chicago who called him that, basically.
This was phenomenally awkward.
Drew says, yeah, get in while you can. You're still going to be out for a few months. Why don't you be a guest commentator for my match at WrestleMania? But before Punk can respond, here comes Seth Rollins. The face off with CM Punk. Welcome Chicago to Monday Night Rollins. Now that we've firmly established whose show this is, has been and always will be, you two can stop bickering before you can get any further. There's a massive CM Punk chant, of course. It's Seth's show, but it's his city. Anyway, Rollins says Punk and McIntyre are morons. Punk can't make decisions about a Mania match if he's not in it. But
CM Punk's reaction to that, by the way, was like, you know when it's the worst thing when you see, like, in a football match, there's some trash talk, there's some afters after a particularly spicy foul, and a footballer will go in someone's face and go, oh, your breath stinks. Like when Seth went, you're not even in it. Punk was like, he's spitting on my face.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Spitting on my face. Like, just every little nanosecond, there was this incredibly awkward tension within the minutiae of everything.
But since they want everyone's opinion, why don't we poll the city? Should CM Punk be on commentary for this title match? It gets a reaction, but mainly people are chanting referee. And Seth says, well, unfortunately, he's injured. He can't count. That arm's injured. And Punk immediately dives onto the mat and shows with his other arm, yes, of course, he can count the 1, 2, 3. But Punk also fires back. To be fair, I don't think I could be objectively fair with these two dip. Okay.
Yep.
Even Drew goes, PG, brother. And then, hang on. Do you want to do another role play here? Would you like to play the role of CM Punk?
Yep.
Seth asks Punk, do you want to know what I think, Punk?
Nope. Way to reduce the least interesting main event player in WWE.
Anyway, Seth says he doesn't think about Punk. He hasn't crossed his mind since they were last in the ring together. He's a non-factor. Punk talks about how everyone needs him, but Punk needs Seth in order to have a moment at WrestleMania. If Punk does do commentary, it'll be the close It'll be the closest he gets to a title shot ever again. He can do whatever he wants at WrestleMania, but just stay out of my way, says Seth.
My way.
Punk says, okay, it's decided. I'll sit next to Cole and Pat. I'll do a little commentary, and I'll do something that the two of you could never do. And he lists all these things, including Seth Rollins' wife, Becky Lynch. He's going to do something those two could never do, and that's make them both interesting.
We're saying the quiet part loud there.
Punk goes to leave, but McIntyre interrupts. He wants the last word. He wants the music off. He says, Punk, you're obsessed. No, sorry. I'm obsessed with the title. Punk, you're obsessed with me because I'm living your dream. I like this bit. You're my number one stan. You write me back just to chill. Truly yours, your biggest fan. This is Phil. And then he gets super kicked by Seth Rollins and a big curb stomp to end this segment.
This was incredible television. Ugly, toxic, childish, incredibly authentic. I was captivated. I had to rewind this so often in my first viewing experience to make sure. Hang on, when is this falling off the rails?
Yeah.
Did CM Punk really just allude to Vince McMahon being a complete piece of What is going on? I was trying to rewind it. It took us 40 minutes to watch this, genuinely. Are they shooting? And here's the big, huge conditional if. If, underscore, italicized, put in bold, if every single subject matter that arose, if every line was kind of approved or within this subject matter, within the parameters of what we're going to say, one of the most sophisticated and great works I've ever seen.
Yes.
The tension was so thick. The tone, the atmosphere was really transgressive, really awkward. It just felt like not a WWE segment, or it felt like a WWE segment going badly wrong. And we know that CM Punk, dating back to 2022, has previous with being injured at the worst possible time, sitting at home, progressively descending into a more vile, foul, toxic, combustible mood.
You said stewing when we were sat in the
office. Stewing. Coming back to TV and it all going, just a total explosion. And this was that.
Yeah.
He couldn't escape this segment without thinking, Christ almighty, these people hate each other. This is pretty great.
Exactly.
If they can harness it, if they can either do it before it all goes tits up.
Yes.
Or if they can sort of go, right, okay, you cannot. If you're Drew and you're bringing up that Vince McMahon endorsed you back in the day, you cannot have your name associated with Vince McMahon.
It is what, like you say.
Wade Keller, by the way, of the PW Torch, a great, enduring, reputable journalist, said that was improvised. And of course it was.
Yeah.
But you cannot be doing that.
Yeah.
You cannot be doing that. Drew's face is very much, again, you could freeze frame on this. It's like it's WWE's Zapruder film, just like the post-brawl out one was, that press conference was. Like, you can zoom in, pause on Drew's face. It was like locked in a grimace, but there was a smile behind it of, I don't quite know what to say. I'm a picture of awkwardness, but I might at the same time be overjoyed that you have just snapped like this. Like CM Punk,
if he hasn't renegotiated a deal, another zero has just been added to Drew's contract.
Oh, Christ, eh? Exactly, that's a really great take. It was just, I could not escape the impression that it is happening again. It is happening again. CM Punk has suffered a injury at the worst possible time, and he's furious about it. And as a pot on the news, what Drew's doing is really inspired. I don't think it's that clever.
It's
just really good. He's a troll. Trolls, by definition, are not clever. They just know exactly what to say to get a rise out of you.
Yeah.
You should. The thing is, it's not. You should know better. It's like CM Punk has been worked. It's like he's been worked and he's really annoyed by something that Drew McIntyre putting on a fictional facade on social media is doing really quite well, too well, to build interest in their predetermined fictional story. And he seems like he's really annoyed by it.
But it also seems like, you know, we've talked a million times about when people kind of cross the line.
Shut up, Will Porn. You didn't respond in 2 seconds, so I'm going to jump down your throat.
I forgot to mention that.
That's what it was. Every second was just thick.
But it, like, you know, we talk sometimes about, like, people saying stuff, and you're like, that's a bit much, isn't it? Referencing, like, family members who've passed away, whatever it may be, right? And we sit here and say, presumably, there's been a conversation of, if you want to use this against me, that's fine. Or can I use that? Yeah, okay, but
I've always said, like, what do the WhatsApp messages between feuding wrestler and their two feuding wrestlers look like? But don't say this. Oh, that's fair game. Say. It's like, it's politically difficult to navigate, I have been informed.
But it doesn't seem like
vast majority will just do business.
Yeah.
They're in the business of having to have thick skin.
But the things that Drew have done, as much as I think they're sensational, I wouldn't think you'd necessarily even have to run that past them.
That's just business.
I'm just gonna go and get a photo outside Minnie's Bakery. He's not gonna be annoyed by that. I'm gonna play Cry Me a River whilst I lift some weights. Like, it's not, he's not gone like scorched earth or questioned someone's marriage or questioned someone, you know, or
there's no sunny days.
No, exactly. Alluded to, you know, losing,
spending a lot of time at the bakery, and I don't mean Mindy's.
Yeah. It's like,
it's the bakers. That would be the better way to do the punchline.
But it's not been stuff that you're like, that's a bit, that's a bit much. You don't talk about that. It's always been like,
it's BTE light.
Yes.
And maybe on a subconscious level, he's associated Drew's brand of patter with the enemy. Mm. I don't know what it is. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist or whatever. Something's wrong.
Mm.
And he seems really, really, really worked up. He just could not let Drew get a word in edgeways. He just was utterly rattled, is the word.
I mean, either way, I'm fascinated. Like, I joke with you. He's either completely gone off the rails, right? Because of what Drew's done, or, as I mentioned, if you watch or if you see the clips on social media, who sat directly behind Drew McIntyre when he's at the commentary desk? It's the Chicago guy from Survivor Series, and maybe Punk's had some sort of flashback to that. Or he's gone, people know about all the history I've got with this, particularly in AEW, but even, you know, I know because obviously the AEW references haven't really landed within WWE. People are aware of...
Yeah.
So he's gone, what if we lean into that? What if I just, you just say whatever you want and I'll just leap all over it like I'm proper bothered. Regardless of what's happened, my God, has it added more fuel to this fire. Like, I think it's fair to say that, you know, we were both looking forward to that World Championship match and we both kind of assumed Punk was either going to be in attendance.
Yeah.
The referee would have been a bit of a stretch probably would have overshadowed the whole thing. But at bare minimum, would have been on commentary. And we'd have probably sat here and gone, that's going to be quite fun. He's going to slag off both people, but he brings a brilliant element of his personality to commentary. It's going to be a fantastic addition. Now, what? Like, they're inevitably going to brawl round to... It was like, oh yeah, Seth's going to have a World Championship match and Drew's probably going to beat him for the belt and that's probably for the best. And then Drew's going to hold it and then Punk's going to come back and blah, 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 blah. But it was kind of secondary to the whole, obviously, Bloodline, Cody, Rock, Roman, etc. Now, you're like, well, what is he going to get involved in the match? Like, it's just added another layer onto everything. And my God, the roar after WrestleMania or whatever, or, you know, counting that there's no word exactly on when CM Punk's going to be cleared. If they can keep that under wraps, it'd be amazing. I just, you know, I thought it was just going to be a nice... Homecoming Chicago. Yeah, Seth and Drew are going to have some jabs at Punk, but he's the hometown hero. He tried at one point, we forgot to mention this, you mentioned this in the office, and I've completely forgot, to get a CM Punk chant going. And because it was going so all over the place, the crowd didn't get on board with it.
The crowd didn't detect it, and that just worsened his mood. Obviously, I'm not saying he wasn't over.
No, he was
a godlike figure, as he always is in Chicago, but that just seemed to... just seemed like his rhythm was off. It just seemed like there was something seriously amiss and that he was really pissed off for whatever reason. And how often does this happen?
Mm.
How long can it keep happening? It makes for unbelievable television, but it just feels so untenable, like untenable. We've been here before. If I've been worked, by the way, I am so happy, but someone very reliable has said the line was improvised about Vince. Mm-hmm. It just, you had to watch it and think, you're not that good at acting. You're just not.
Is Punk on Raw next week as well?
I don't know.
I misremember. I feel like it's been said that he's on this one.
I hope so. I think our brilliant, handsome producer is about to check it out. But my broad take on this, because we went all over the shop and bit by bit by bit, was like, I was reminded of, I'm a parent. This was like watching children. Children play games that they are, for whatever reason, I don't know the psychology behind it. Children are desperate to win games. Mm. I don't know what it is. It's like they're not, they haven't matured or whatever. So they can't like sanction the concept of losing because I think they just get what they want and they want to win. Mm. And when the learning process of I don't always get to win, just it rattles them. Mm. It was just so redolent, this entire segment of watching children who had to get the last word, who had to, like,
it worked quite well in terms of the Drew aspect of that, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because he's like, no, we're not ending on that.
This was like excessively effective
in
terms of building my interest in these characters and wanting to see what happens next. And if they can, it's probably the best can they coexist storyline WWE has ever told. Three, Seth was trying to be the bigger man. He needs to just get down to the mummy.
Yeah.
Just children changing the rules of the game of, I won that one, I won that exchange, I'll chat my name, or I'm the best. Children, corn cobs, insisting over and over again that they have not been owned. This remarkably petty, awkward, childish display of, I won that battle, or I've got the killer line, or your friends are someone who, well, here's the thing about you, is that the person who thinks you're good was accused of sex trafficking. What the f*** are you doing? Are you f***ing stupid? Like, I just could not believe my eyes.
I'd be astonished if there is a single ticket for WrestleMania left after this.
He is on the go.
Yes! Oh, we don't get to preview it.
I'm still going to watch it.
Yeah, we'll talk more about it on tour just next week. And then the day after that, we fly to America.
God,
what a week.
The energy on this was something you'll never see on WWE television, and it's something that you cannot maintain for long.
No.
Untenable is the word here. Ugly, toxic, in spite of itself, unbelievably captivating.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, after that, Shinsuke Nakamura cut a promo. He's going to turn Jey Uso's dreams into a nightmare. Meek Mill's going to be at WrestleMania. And then we got... Let me just check my notes. The one women's match on Monday Night Raw. I know they main evented last week, so it's slightly different, but we still have to hold them to the same standards that we hold.
I'm not doing the line reading.
No. And you sensed that may have been cut short as well, this match. I know it only had one beat to it, really. I suppose everything after that, they went, Well, we know what the last 10 minutes is, so everyone else is going to have to fit in one way or another. But yeah, sub 2 minutes, not a good look for WWE this. But yeah, it was Ivynar versus Candice LeRae. Back and forth early on, Ivynar wants to kick her ass, obviously, for what she said about Maxime Dupri. At one point, though, Candice LeRae goes down. She's holding her knee. Seemingly to allow Indy Hartwell to attack Ivynar while she's on the outside. No one's told Indy Hartwell about this because she's not on board with it. She doesn't do anything.
The acting was awful. Mm.
Now comes back in. Referees, they separate him. And eventually, Candice just rolls her up, puts her feet on the ropes and gets the pin. 1, 2, 3. Goes out, celebrates afterwards. And Indy Hartwell's like, what the bloody hell was that? What the bloody hell was that?
I don't care. I couldn't care less about this if I'm like...
It's not quite the same, is it? Like, horrific insult towards Maxime Dupri, exploiting a genuine injury of your... Well, genuine in kayfabe. Genuine injury of your opponents to roll up with the feet on the ropes.
Yeah, not good in the way of dramatic escalation or anything, this.
But then again, after what they've just got to follow here, it's understandable that the crowd might have been pretty flat for all this.
Oh, Christ, aye.
We go backstage, DIY and New Day are arguing. Your name's crap. He'll love this. In comes Awesome Truth. He's very excited because tonight we get to see the New Day versus DX. That's not DX, bloody idiot. And he's got JBL on commentary. And Miz is like, it's not JBL, it's Pat McAfee. And he's like, what are you talking about? JBL's changed his name to Pat McAfee. It was really funny, Sage.
No. I hate you.
Truth and Miz.
We were like really getting on this morning. Yeah. We were basically being the Rock. We'll
get back to it.
Kind of the kills in the jungle.
Yeah. And you could see McIntyre talking to Heyman in the background of all this. I suppose that's the one real takeaway. And then we got New Day versus Gargano and Ciampa. R-Truth talks about Shawn Michaels being involved in the match. Happy to see him in there. Gargano's eating the Unicorn Stampede. I mean, I could run through the match. It was good because it's Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods, Johnny Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa. But in the end, Gargano hits a suicide dive to the outside. There's a break involved in all this. And Gargano hits a suicide dive to the outside. Here comes Judgment Day. This was Damian Priest's plan. Kick everybody's ass, basically. They beat up everyone. They fight back, obviously, do DIY and New Day, but the numbers game eventually catches up to them. Miz tries to help. R-Truth throughout this isn't helping. He's on commentary duty, so he's just commentating on his friends getting their ass kicked. Everyone gets completely laid out, and Judgment Day circle on R-Truth, who tries to get us to throw to a commercial break to stop this from happening. But they grab him, chuck him in the ring. Then he decides he's going to fight him. He fights a few of them off, but Priest cuts him off. Razor's Edge, coup de grace from Finn Balor. Judgment Day stand tall to set up this 8-man that we're getting next week.
Match I've completely forgotten about. It was completely overshadowed, as you'd expect, by the two major talking points that emerged from this episode of Raw. And I just hate, generally, this weird way that they... Both North American majors do it, like WWE and AEW, when they build a multi-man. I hate how they all find themselves fighting. It's always the most contrived, rubbish stuff.
Mm. Moving on. Cody Rhodes gets caught up backstage by Jack Redmond. That's what The Rock told him in the ring. And he said, I'm sorry to you, I'm sorry to the fans, but what The Rock told me is not something I want to repeat. It's a promise he can't keep. We'll see about that. Kathy Gelly interviews Gunther about Sami Zayn. He hasn't really got to say much about Sami Zayn. His words are empty. Chicago's filled with losers like Zayn, he implies. And even they don't think that Sami Zayn can win. I don't think he can even beat Bronson Reed tonight. She's like, you're going to be out there watching? And he's like, I just don't think he can beat Bronson Reed. More on that shortly. Then it was time for Andrade versus Giovanni Vinci. It's meant to be Ivar. Get well soon, Ivar. Yeah. He wasn't medically cleared. Andrade, big chop to start things off. It's good fun for the brief match that it was. We get the Tranquilo in the ropes early on. Andrade sends Vinci to the apron. Drop kick to flying Vinci as well. Andrade goes up top, moonsaults to the outside, rolls him back in. Goes for another moonsault. Vinci moves, but he lands on his feet and hits another one to drop him. Gets a 2 count. Goes for another, but Vinci blocks. Oh, no, sorry. Suplex. Goes for another suplex. Vinci blocks. Big boot to him. Vinci hits a big crossbody to Andrade to take us to a break. But when we come back from the break, Andrade hits that awesome black back elbow of his and the twisting double underhook DDT, which they're apparently calling the message for the 1-2-3.
Match was broadly good. Some of the work was really impactful, tight. It didn't really feel like Andrade was a huge star.
No.
At all. There should at least be a novelty of freshness. I haven't seen him in a WWE ring for some years. I don't know whether they've like just dawdled too much in terms of the presentation of the character. If they have made it all too clear that they're working things out.
Didn't get an entrance,
as they
did he?
Go,
just in
didn't
the ring.
Get an entrance.
I've sensed that's probably because of the Punk overrun.
I know, but how many times does this have to happen?
Yeah.
Like, if we're going to, you know, praise WWE to the hilt for their production values as being this, you know, entity that just gets television, it's on a sloppy sharp, and all the rest of it. How many, because these things do add up. Like, how many times does a match have to get cut short or feel like it's being cut short, or you get your new returning would-be star in his second match back, he's getting jobber entranced. If we're going to praise WWE for all the genuine improvements they've made to their production, they're not getting the basics right half the time at this point.
I agree, but I would say this is the one occasion where you wouldn't be like, Jeff, can you go out and tell Punk to just kind of wrap it up?
Yeah, I know.
I'm not going out there when he's like this.
Nope.
Rhea Ripley comes out next with Dominic Mysterio. She's concerned that she's not really getting Becky Lynch's full attention. Lynch is wrestling week after week. Ripley says, I could have attacked her after one of her matches, but I want to be respectful. I want her attention. I'm getting impatient. Dom tries to speak, but obviously gets booed out of the building, and this brings out Becky Lynch. And she's like, look, here I am. When you're fresh rather than waiting like I do, or like you do with me, sorry, after a 20-minute match. But then again, I can't do that because you never wrestle on Raw anyway. Ripley doesn't need to wrestle the biggest match before the biggest match of her career. All she has to do is post a video online and these freaks will eat it up. Hang on, I think there's a button for this.
And I mean, folks, where's the lie?
Are you one of those freaks, Adam? Nick Wilborn.
I'm just doing my due diligence and my research for the pods.
But why would you have to scrutinize over and over again? Because I see you at your desk over and over again. Footage from a house show when you are doing notes for your hosting of a review of a TV show.
I just want to make sure, you know, if they allude to it, I'm covering off all the topics.
Okay, what other matches were booked on that house show? Because they might have alluded to them.
Yeah, no, it's gone. Sorry. Mine's gone blank.
All right.
We'll say the lads I play five side with said, see that stink face thing over the weekend? She's not wrong.
As far as I'm aware, they are not. Going the people you play football with, freaks. Oh, okay, fair enough.
Lynch says they have different interpretations of what it means to be champion. You know, Ripley puts a video of her showing her ass while she's busting her ass every week to prove herself. Lynch says, look, there's always going to be someone newer and younger and hotter. But the long game in this, you know, was about skill, merit, and survival. It's how you respond to when the chips are down and you're not the chosen one anymore. Not a great week to say that.
No.
But, you know, that's not her fault. Ripley hasn't experienced that yet, but she is going to experience it at WrestleMania. Ripley says, you're a survivor. You're also a cockroach. You're hard to kill, but not impossible. But I don't want to do that to you. I want you to be alive after WrestleMania because I want you to watch what I do. And I want you to sit at home with your daughter and listen to her call me mammy.
Oh, what a line.
Lynch says, that's your one and only pass. You mentioned my daughter again. It's the last word you ever say. She gets a bit emotional. She says her father never got to meet her daughter. He was proud of everything she'd done in the ring, but the thing that he'd be most proud of, was the mother that she'd become. Might be a joke to Ripley. It's not a joke to her. And she says, that belt might be a joke to you, but it's not a joke to me either. Lynch said, there's nothing respectful about you. The reason why you never attacked me after my match is because you knew that once you throw the first punch, there is no going back. And she tells her that neither of us are going to be the same again after WrestleMania. And there's a real tension. There's a stare down. And Dom's like, Mommy, I got it from here. Steps in between them and...
Oh, my God.
Becky Lynch f***ing chins him. Oh, great bump from Dominic Mysterio. And credit to WWE again for the production of, like, you know, I'm not always a huge fan of the Pat McAfee, let's slow this down and do that. But when you get a shot like that...
Oh, you've got to luxuriate in that.
Just, you know, when they're like the jaw moves separate to the rest of the face. Anyway, Lynch and Ripley get into it. Ripley gets the better of it and posts Becky Lynch. Ripley's leading Dom away and Lynch recovers, jumps over the steps, jumps onto Ripley. They get pulled apart. Again, go back together. Becky Lynch drops Dominic Mysterio again, I believe, but eventually officials separate them. I love this.
I thought this was class. I was super impressed with it on a number of levels. This has really enhanced my emotional interest in watching this match. Home run of a segment.
Yeah.
And I'm all the more impressed with it because this had no right to land as effectively as it did when you've got those two jaw agape, what the hell am I watching moments elsewhere on the show. So I was really impressed by their ability to do something that will linger in the memory. I can't even remember them. When you said, was it New Day versus DIY? I pretty much forgot that match had existed. Yeah. This was not that at all.
No.
The two principal things I was really impressed with is in wrestling, right? And wrestlers themselves have said, oh, it's kind of ridiculous, but this is the way it goes. You kind of come to blows, right? But you kind of have to tell a story where you hate the other person. They did a really good job of explaining, right, we hate each other, but this is why we haven't come to blows yet. Like, there's a really good Becky Lynch line that explained it. And it's really hard to do because, as I said, like, wrestling storytelling is kind of inherently flawed. It just is. I thought they did a really good job of that. And the delivery on Becky Lynch... No one's ever insulted my child is a bit or in earnest, right? Even if they did it as a bit, I probably would get like really, really, really wound up.
I thought the same thing, yeah.
So I think she's done a really good job of channeling and like really delving in to like character, basically getting lost in the character and being able to summon the precise emotional response you would come out with had someone said that about your child. Really tremendous character work from Becky Lynch. Home run of a segment.
Yeah, they really have hit their groove on the road to WrestleMania.
If this was the go-home show, can you imagine?
Yeah. Another week of this. Like, if this genuinely
is
jazz.
If next week is as good. Like, this is the first time I'm anticipating a Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
Since, like, 1990... No, since 2001.
Yeah.
And even 2000. The WrestleMania 17 build was absolute drivel. So since it's in 24 years.
Yeah.
And again, there's a McMahon in every corner. 25 years.
Okay, fair enough. Speaking of which, though, Sami Zayn's walking backstage ahead of his match with Bronson Reed, and Chad Gable comes up to him, tries to apologize for what he said, but Sami, you know, doesn't care. Doesn't need to hear an apology. You know, he said what he felt, and that's okay. Zayn's like, yeah, look, you don't think I can beat Gunther. And Gunther doesn't think I can beat Reed. But Zayn wants to make Gunther eat his words tonight. Gable's like, no, that's exactly what Gunther wants. Gunther's ruining your focus. Get your head out of your ass. Focus on Bronson Reed. Zayn's like, you know what? I appreciate that. Shakes his hand, goes out there to face Bronson Reed. And what Chad Gable said happened. It plays into this brilliantly. It's Bronson Reed versus Sami Zayn. A good choice of opponent in terms of, if you don't really pay attention, Bronson Reed is going to mess you up. I also like the fact, deliberately otherwise, he got bloodied. I mean, I know what's coming.
Yeah.
Even so.
I've got a point to make later about the main event and I go segment, and it's going to expose me as a huge hypocrite, but okay. I don't care.
So Reed runs him over to start, but Sami sends him out to the floor. Big flip dive, sends Bronson Reed back into the ring. Gets caught on a huge crossbody, though. Reed runs him over, big chop in the corner, sends Sami outside, and he comes off the apron with a big shoulder. to knock Sammy down to take us to a break. When we come back, Zayn makes a comeback, but who comes out onto the stage? But of course, the Intercontinental Champion, Gunther. This makes Sammy think, time to blue thunder bomb Bronson Reed, I think. Yeah, that's not going to happen. He also, and I don't know why, I'm such a child, he also does the spot, which it makes me, I know it's not meant to make me laugh, but it makes me laugh whenever someone picks up a big lad and just goes, oh, bloody hell. Just
oh, my God, are you 4 years old?
Funny. But Sami Zayn comes back. Tornado DDT out of the corner. Sets up for the Huluva kick, but he takes too much time to pay attention to Gunther. And that allows Reed to recover. Drop him the clothesline. Sent on. Tsunami. 1-2-3. Sami Zayn gets pinned.
It's a rubbish finish, isn't it? They wrote this finish in this segment on the back of a beer mat. This is just... It was weird. If nothing else, the finish, the match was kind of just there. I know you thought it was a riot. The match was kind of just there. The finish was awful. This was one of those, WWE has made pretty significant improvements to its product. This was like an echo to like a significantly worse time.
But I did like the fact it was followed up. I'll get to the Jey Uso thing in a second. It's followed up by Zayn being furious backstage for letting Gunther get into his head, and Gable saying this is exactly what he does. He plants seeds in doubt.
But this is exactly what every other rubbish heel, not every rubbish heel, not every other rubbish heel. Obviously, Gunther's an incredible heel and an even better wrestler, but I just didn't watch it. This is not convincing.
I'm just intrigued by the fact, he says he plants these seeds of doubt, makes you doubt yourself, and that's how he beats you, basically. If you want to win at Mania, you need a different approach. Let's talk. I'm fascinated.
I'm not... I still have reservations about how they've complicated the picture. He's got two great baby faces, and I don't know. I will let it play out.
Yeah, I will
do this if it all goes good.
I don't know how they're gonna do it in a week, but I'm along for the ride. Prior to that, by the way, Jey Uso cut a promo responding to Shinsuke Nakamura, saying he's been sleeping on him for too long, etc. And just as he cuts the promo, who should arrive in shot but Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso, who just look at him. Jimmy says, no yeet. And then just before Jey makes his entrance for this match against Shinsuke, Rollins is there at Gorilla and says, look, something's off about tonight. I love the slow build of tension.
It was really well done.
Something's off tonight, but don't worry, me and Cody have got your back. And it was time for Jey Uso versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Back and forth early on. Jey gets sent into the post. Some running knees to put Jey out onto the floor. Go to a break. We come back. Jay's fighting back, gets caught with the sliding German suplex of Nakamura's.
The right something is building here.
Nakamura hits that running knee to the back of Jay's head, and they're both down. At this point, we see Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa enter through the crowd before they can get involved in anything, though. They are attacked by Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. Seth posts Solo. Cody fights Jimmy up the ramp. And then out of nowhere, as Seth has sent Solo into the crowd, Drew McIntyre grabs Rollins. Future Shock DDT on the outside of the ring. In the ring, by the way. Paying any attention.
I don't give a f***.
Yeah, I almost forgot to mention what happened here. They both get back up, and in the end, Jey hits Nakamura with a super kick and a spear and gets the 1-2-3. So, after that match, they cut to the back. Jimmy's brawling with Cody Rhodes. He gets beaten up because it's Jimmy Uso. Solo attacks, but Cody's managing to fight him off when he is attacked from behind by The Rock.
Oh my God.
Who yells, look at you now, boy!
Oh my God.
I'm gonna break the button.
You're gonna come.
Yeah. Just imagine I'm
pressing
this after every sentence because it's gonna get annoying if I do that.
You are worried about being annoying?
Yeah.
Are you?
Worried about overshadowing the final boss, and then I don't want to do that. He says,
I don't think you could have tried, to be honest.
He says, you think The Rock was just going to let you talk trash for these past 2 weeks? He says, look at you now! He says that quite a lot, and I pop every time. He spits on Cody Rhodes at this point as well. You might not have seen this. He hits him with a trash can to the head. He grabs a toolbox and empties it on him. And then they brawl through the doors out into the parking lot where Michael Sidgwick, it's raining. And what is out there but Cody's bus?
Anna! Extreme manner.
Rock says, look at this, Chicago. It's perfect. You're upset? He's talking to the crowd here. You're upset that The Rock wasn't saying anything? Well, The Rock's got your attention now, hasn't he, you pieces of s***?
Right. He's busting. He's busting.
The Rock sort of kicks him around. It's raining. I'm not sure if I mentioned that.
Oh, my God.
He shouts at Cody to get up. Get up. I'm the final boss. Get up. John Cena and Stone Cold Steve Austin are watching. Their faces are on the bus.
Yes.
Coincidence? I think not.
I think so. Okay. Because WWE doesn't really update the buses very often.
I think not.
He thinks not. He thinks.
I'm convinced he's got me. I'm convinced. Well, we're all in a good mood.
Yeah. Surprisingly so. He shouts to the watching audience, look at your hero. And then he yells about Mama Rhodes. And he says, don't you worry, I've got a gift for you. He throws Cody repeatedly into the side of his own bus.
Do the throne gesture. What's a motherfucking name?
He says, basically, it didn't have to be like this.
Yeah, it didn't have to be like that.
Love the fact you're the hype man now. It didn't have to be like this.
Nope, didn't.
All of this is happening because of Cody Rhodes.
Cody Rhodes.
There's been some accusations.
Accusations!
Yeah, sorry, wrong one. So he throws Cody into the bus one more time.
Anna!
And Cody's been busted open. At which point, The Rock says, the prophecy has come true.
Yeah, someone else is coming as well.
He's got Cody. Cody's slumped up against the bus at this point. And callback slaps him and then reveals and I'm sorry Hamlet's not here for this. He reveals a white weight belt with Mama Rhodes written on it with the Rock's logo. He smears his hand over a bloodied Cody Rhodes' forehead and rubs the blood on the weight belt. And he says, I said this, it's going to be a bloody weight belt I'm going to give to you, covered in your tears as well, Mama Rhodes. And then he starts talking about Cody's dad. Talks about hard times. Hard times. Your dad talked about hard times. I'm going to learn you about hard times.
Oh, my God. I'm going to learn them. I love that.
Yeah.
That'll learn them to bust my tomato.
I'm going to learn you about hard times.
Why is that? I always found that so funny.
Yeah. And then to conclude, he says,
there's a perfectly good verb, but you just use learn instead. It's always pop me.
Yeah. He says, this is what happens when you f*** with the final boss.
Oh, God.
And he sends him into the bus one more time. He kneels over his lifeless body now, basically. And he says,
what's my motherfucking name?
No, he says. He said, didn't say that. He says, look at your son, Mama Rhodes. It didn't have to be this way, but now this is the only way. Oh, God. Hang on, I think there's a button for this. I believe so. Hang on.
An incredible angle. Wow. An absolutely incredible angle. You fuse the tone, the sensibilities, and the bloodshed of Jim Crockett Promotions,
mm-hmm.
and you film it under the Blade Runner aesthetic, and you get me hard. That's what gets Michael Sidgwick's nipples hard. Michael Sidgwick's cock hard. This is unbelievable stuff.
Yeah.
Roman Reigns is a bitch now. He's going to have to rise to the challenge because, oh my God, the final boss. He wasn't even the final boss. He's kind of like the underboss.
Oh.
If anything. Technically, in terms of the progression of the story and the finale. This is just an just an unbelievable angle, which leads me to my point. It was late 2021 and early 2022, particularly 2022, because that's when Moxley was on point and mm-hmm. bleeding every week.
Yeah.
I still think it's cool every single time. Mm. I don't think I'll ever get bored of blood, but at the same time, it lost its potency. Yeah. There was a difference to John Moxley bleeding every other match to something like Dustin Rhodes at Double or Nothing. I understood rationally that something had been lost along the way. I espouse discipline and storytelling every single week on these podcasts. I wish Triple H had a little bit less, and I wish Tony Khan had a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about being really disciplined and making things feel special when they need to is that when was the last honest-to-God worked Blade job in WWE?
No idea.
Are we talking like not in the last decade?
No.
Surely not.
Not that I can think. I genuinely can't
approved
think.
Approved as well.
Yeah.
Wasn't there one Batista got fined or whatever?
Yeah, that was like 2010, I want to say. Yeah.
If you don't do these things, they will be special. And this was just a great example of not shooting your load, not busting your nut, not doing things to excess. And these things becoming, like, this is such a striking, unique visual. And because it's such a rarity, it just scanned as this unbelievable transgression. This was a fabulous, old-fashioned, very simple professional wrestling angle, elevated. Nobody else could narrate it. It's meant to feel like this, smash and grab, bloody him up, right, his gang's coming to get us, we need to bail. Like, really elaborate. Went on for ages. There was no hint of it getting disrupted. So it was very staged. But who else to stage it other than Dwayne The Rock Johnson? It's got extreme manner.
Mm.
What did you feel like?
I couldn't believe what I was watching. It's the obvious stuff as well. Like you say, the Blade job, wow. And the fact Cody's got blonde hair. You know, simple things sometimes.
Yeah.
It just works so much better. But like you say, yeah, there's probably like, by the time they go out again into the rain, I think there was maybe 5 minutes. And like, that's a long time to effectively, you're not going to hit any moves. There was a split second I thought he was going to throw him over that barrier. And I was like, well, he'll die if you do that. But like, there was no moves. It wasn't like he was going to hit him with a rock bottom on the concrete or anything like that. So it's just Dwayne beats up Cody outside in the rain and trash talks him. And at some point, he grabs the camera, Cody blades and that. But there didn't feel like a second where it was like Rock's kind of playing for time here. He's been told, actually, there's another couple of minutes before we go off air. Look at you now, boy. First thing he said, Jesus. I've watched this twice, three times now, right? One for pure enjoyment, one to make notes, and then another one for pure enjoyment.
Yeah.
I want to watch it again and again and again. My concern, as you alluded to, is the video package. Video package for night two is fine. You'll have the screw job from 39 and then Cody winning the Rumble and then a bit from night one to set up, fingers crossed, Bloodline rules. Video package for night one is going to be, The Rock's been a bloody terror to Cody Rhodes. And Roman Reigns, he's going to be involved somehow or another.
Yeah.
Like,
The Rock is too good for his own good. What is he playing at? You can't, like, be bad or if you're The Rock and you think, now, should I go 7 out of 10 so Roman doesn't look like a 4? Mm. That's going to go 10. You know what I mean? Like, it's on Roman Reigns to step the hell up.
Yeah.
That's like, it's becoming an issue. I've never really doubted the atmosphere for night two, because I was just so in admiration of what a good job they did last year. I'm starting to worry about that night two match for the first time.
Mm. I think with the
night one match injected into my goddamn veins.
Yeah. I think with the shenanigans, because I'm assuming Bloodline rules, as I said, it's going to be fine. But the manner on night one.
No, the manner on night one's absolutely out of goddamn control.
You know, like, people sell, like, air from Wales on eBay. And you're like, what's that? It's a jar of nothing, basically.
Yeah.
Or farts or whatever. Like, you could just sell jars of manna. We just set up a shop at
we don't have the manna, though.
No, but it doesn't matter. Manna's not really a quantifiable thing.
It is when the Rock exhales.
But if you just say, look, this has got manna in it, it's $20.
Well, what if, right, the Rock, Philadelphia, right, is making his entrance. Goes up on that top turnbuckle. Right? And he's breathing in, then he goes... Someone just gets a jar, goes like that.
That's the manna.
Screws it on. That's a manna. That's the manna.
That's wrestle manna.
That's wrestle manna. I'd buy it with money. I'm sorry, I would buy it with money.
A sensational episode of Monday Night.
Do you want a t-shirt? Or do you want some manna? Do you want the manna, please? What the Rock is cooking. Yes, Nicholas.
Brilliant. Brilliant episode of Monday Night Raw that we all now can't look forward to the follow-up next week.
Me.
It's wild.
Me.
Please do let us know your thoughts on everything we have discussed, either in the comment section below or on X at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow both. So you can follow Michael Sidgwick. What's your name?
And what's my motherfucking name? At Extreme Manor.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow our brilliant producer at It's Adam Nicholas. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. We'll be back later on today to look ahead to NXT. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we see you soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.